is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
New York City, 1776. It is springtime. The arrival of a man who was not successful in Boston and is looking to be more successful in New York. His name, George Washington. This event introduces the drama that is in a new book, The Great New York Fire of 1776, a lost story of the American Revolution by Professor Benjamin L. Karp, Professor of History at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center. Professor, a very good evening to you. Congratulations. As George Washington arrives, he had sent one of his trusted generals, General Lee, there beforehand, but now he comes into New York City looking to establish an anchor for the rebel cause, the Continental Army. His army is chiefly made up, almost entirely made up at this time, of men from New England. What is the city that George Washington finds in the spring of 76? Good evening to you, Professor.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm glad to be here. What Washington finds is a city that had been diverse and mixed for almost the entire history of European settlement. He finds a city that had been politically divided, some people favoring independence and others very much not, others wanting to be left alone and just carry on commerce. It was a city of big business. It was the second largest town in the rebelling 13 colonies, but for all that, quite small, 25,000 people, comparable to a college town or something nowadays. And Washington gets there and he finds that the British Navy is still has command of the harbor, but he does largely control what's going on land. But he's very suspicious of some of the pockets of loyalists that he knows are in Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, and to a smaller extent, maybe in New York City itself.
You report that the city is depopulated, two-thirds have fled. So the people there at this point, are they doing the commerce, or is it has the commerce left the town with the population?
Commerce is definitely not thriving, but of course the army itself still needs goods. But the city is much diminished. A lot of people had fled with their families, and if they were wealthy enough, just left a servant behind to mind things. Most people wanted to get out of the way of a conflict they knew was coming.
And are they aware that there's a British fleet and a British army with troops from the Hessian troops on board? Are they aware that it's inbound? Do they know that the future is bleak?
They pretty much anticipate that this is going to be the British Army's next target. There are British warships already in the harbor. Most of the British Army and Navy is either in Halifax, Nova Scotia, or they're en route across the Atlantic, including Hessian troops that George III had contracted to hire.
Because we turn on the question of who, if anyone, is responsible for the fire of 1776, in the minds of George Washington and the army drifting in groups, regiments, is the burning of Charlestown, this during the siege of Boston and the charge of, we remember as Bunker Hill, though it was Breed's Hill. Is Charlestown's burning, is the burning of the city of Falmouth in Massachusetts, is that a major debate here as people are in New York, the burning of a city by the British?
Yeah, I mean, these are incidents that the Americans and Washington himself had definitely talked about. The destruction of Charlestown happens within sight of Boston. The destruction of Falmouth in Maine was really shocking. There were some other minor raids throughout New England by the British Navy. This causes a lot of outrage in the Continental Congress, in Washington's camp, and throughout America. The idea that, hey, the Americans are only asking for some concessions at this point, and King George III has so clearly put the colonies out from under his protection that his warships are willing to burn American cities.
That summer, there are wild ideas tossed around in New York. You cite some of them. A mob attacks people and humiliates them. And then there's said to be a, quote, hellish plot to kill George Washington, which may or may not have been accurate, but it was called a diabolical plot. And you report that one man was hanged, a man who was responsible for Washington's security. All of this rumor during that summer. It very much introduced the possibility of extreme and radical moves. What was the opinion about burning New York that summer before the British arrived?
Sure. I mean, if you look at it from Washington's perspective, he has three choices. He can stand and defend the city. And if he feels that he is capable of doing that, you know, that is the thing that's going to do the most to lift up morale, give people throughout the North American colonies confidence that the Continental Army can stand up to the British, etc. But if he doesn't feel that he can defend the city, he has two choices. He can flee and leave the city intact, or he can flee and burn the city behind him. And if he does leave the city for the British, then the British are going to derive great advantages from New York City. It will be winter quarters for the army. It'll be a naval base for the Royal Navy. And it'll eventually become a market and a commercial center for loyalists who want to reestablish New York City as an important part of the British Empire.
The Howe brothers arrived June 29th with their army and and augmenting the fleet already commanding the harbor. George Washington at this point is not ready to take on the whole of the British army, but eventually we know that we're going to the Battle of Long Island in August. I wanted to spend a little moment with the conditions of the New York. This is an area that we call Lower Manhattan today. From the ferry to how far north, in today's terms, Professor, describe New York City before it becomes farms and wasteland?
Yeah, I mean, the city is almost entirely rural north of Delancey Street. Even Canal Street kind of represents the northern limits of the really urbanized part of New York City. The Bowery was just starting to be built up.
And the Continental Army, as it arrives, is it finding places to stay? Are the empty houses turned over to the army? Where do they garrison the Continental troops?
Many of the troops seem to have been stationed in people's houses. Of course, there were the existing barracks that the British troops had used during the colonial period. And I suppose failing that, people could set up encampments in City Hall Park and whatnot. But also the army has to be stationed in Upper Manhattan, on Long Island, in some of the other islands throughout the New York archipelago, in what's now the Bronx. So Washington possibly could have recruited enough men to match the British, but they have to be very spread out. And given the British maneuverability with the Navy, Washington's not exactly sure where the British are going to land in force. And of course, if he has to split up his army, they're going to be divided and not able to necessarily meet the British in force.
And characterizing the Continental Army from your reporting, that seems an exaggeration. It is neither Continental nor its army. Nor an army. It's made up of regiments, usually from locales with a captain, someone who is elected to lead them. They're characterized at the time as ragged, cold, ill, drunken, cowardly, lawless, and led by laborers and hypocritical parsons. And those are the men who are well organized. So we're not looking at something where there's a lot of easy discipline or to be led into battle with orders that are responded to immediately. We're looking at many motives over a large region, New England, and George Washington from Virginia has not worked with them before. He's not been in a battle with them yet.
Other than, because he had not yet arrived when Bunker Hill had taken place. He had certainly been among those men for almost a year at that point. But he had not yet been called upon to fight in battle with them. And he's complaining about their level of discipline. In fact, he has written to Congress and requested stricter articles of war that will enable him to give more harsh whippings, to prescribe capital punishment for more crimes. He is really disgusted with the behavior of some of his men.
I'm speaking with Professor Benjamin Karp. The imminent destruction of New York has all these details because there's a decision that still has not been finalized nearly 250 years later. Was it an accident or was it by design? And we're giving you major clues that at the time and now make it not possible to come to one conclusion. That's what's so compelling about the professor's story. I'm speaking with Benjamin L. Carr, professor of history at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center. The book is The Great Fire of 1776, A Lost Story. When we come back, the defeat on Long Island and what it means for Manhattan. I'm John Battle.